The shiur tonight is titled Stories from the Gemara, Harlots, and Heresy. So tonight we're going to continue with a series of shiurim that we started last week, basically highlighting stories from the Gemara that seem to have an anti-religious element to them, but they're really there to teach us a deeper idea about Judaism, about a different philosophical point in Judaism. So the shiur tonight is going to really focus on this Gemara and Avodah Zarah, and there's two stories that we're going to take up. And the first one is about harlots, and the second one is about heresy. So the first one is actually the second story chronologically in the Gemara, and it's a famous story. I remember doing it when I was younger, and then I looked it over again. I had some different insights, new insights into this story. So we'll look in source number one. It's the Gemara Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. And the story is a fascinating one. So the Gemara is taking up a question of, you know, when a person, or what averos a person dies from immediately when they do tshuva. It's a philosophical question. But the Gemara, in the meantime, takes up a story. It starts with three words in, V'hatanya. So the Gemara says, V'hatanya, did it not teach in a braisa? Amru alav al-rav Elazar ben Dordia. So there's a story about this guy named Elazar, Rav Elazar ben Dordia. Shelo hiniach zona achas ba'olam shelo ba'alel. So this guy, Rav Elazar ben Dordia, he didn't have, he was with every prostitute in the whole entire world. There was not one prostitute that he was not with. Pam achas, shama sheyesh zona achas b'krache hayam, v'haysan otelas kis dinar and b'schara. So he heard this that there was this one harlot, this one prostitute that was very far away, and her price was a kiss of dinarim, a pocketful of dinarin. So what did he do? Natal kiss dinarin. He took a pocket full of money. V'halach v'avar le'a shiva naharos, and he crossed seven rivers to find this one harlot, this one person. Bishas hergal davar. So what happens? He gets to her, he pays her the money, and bishas hergal davar. Look at Rashi over there in source number two. What's Hergel Delver? Tashmish Hergel Haschala, Kemo Margilin Adam Le'erva, Mamshichin, Vahainu Haschala. So in the beginning, as they were first starting up, so what happens is, Hificha, she lets out a breath of air. That's how most people interpret it. Rashi says, Hificha Ruach, she lets out air. Amra, she says, Kishem Hificha Zu Ina Choseres L'makomo. Just like this air, this breath of air, will not return to its original place where it came from. Kach Elazar ben Dordia in Mekabon Oso B'tshuva. So too, Elazar ben Dordia will never be received in Tshuva. Okay, so the story is that there's this guy, Rav Elazar ben Dordia, the Gemara is bringing down in a Braisa, and he was with every prostitute, and he hears about this one prostitute very far away, goes to her, and as they're starting up, involved in Bia. So what happens is, so she lets out a breath of air and she teaches him this idea that he'll never be accepted in his tshuva. So the Gemara continues. So what happens? It says, Halach v'yashav bein shnei harim ugvaos. So what's his response? He goes and he sits between various mountains and valleys. Amar, and he says, Harim ugvaos bikshu alai, actually hill, sorry, he says, Harim ugvaos bikshu alai rachamim. So he wants them to help him and ask Hashem for mercy. So Amru lo, the Harim ugvaos say, Achan uvakshu alecha nevakish al atzmenu. We have to ask for ourselves, for mercy on ourselves. Shenamar, and they quote a pasuk, Ki yaharim yamushu v'hagvaos timutena. So it means that the mountains will depart and the hills will falter. So first he goes to the mountains and the hills and he asks them to help him in terms of asking for rachamim, and they say, no, we have to ask for ourselves. We can't help you. Amar, then he goes to the Shemaim Varetz. He says, Amar, Shemaim Varetz, bikshu alai rachamim. So he goes to the heavens and the earth and he says, can you help me with this? So they say the same thing. Amru, Achanu Mavakshan Alecha, Nevakish Alatzmenu. We have our own issues that we have to ask for mercy for. Shenamar, as it says, there's a pasuk that indicates that the Shemaim and the Arts will dissipate. It says, Ki Shemaim Ka'ashat Nimlechu V'Arts Kiveget Tivle. So the heavens will dissipate like smoke, and the land will wear out like old clothes. Okay, Amar, now he goes to his next next element, Amar Chamo Levana Bikshol Dai Rachman. He goes to the sun of the moon, and he asks the sun of the moon to request Rachman, to ask for mercy for him. So they say the same thing. Amar Lo Achan Uvakshin Alech Nevake Yishal Atzmenu Shnemar V'Chafra Levana Uvosha Chama. So same answer. So there's a pasuk that says that the moon will be humiliated and the sun will be embarrassed. So they say, we can't help you, we have to help ourselves. Finally, last one, Omar Kulchavim Mazalos, Bikshul Rachman. He goes to the stars and the constellations and he says, can you request Rachman for me? Amrlo, Achanum Vakshim Alecha, Nevake Shalatzmino. Same answer. We have our own problems to worry about. Shneamar, as it says, Vinamaku Kol Tzva Shamayim, that they will all dissolve. So this is, in this part of the story, this guy, Rav Elazar ben Dordia, he's very upset, he's very moved by this, by what the harlot told him. And he goes to these elements, elements of nature. He goes to the mountains, and he asks them to help him, and they say, we can't help you. Then he goes, after that, to the Shamayim and the Arts, they say, we can't help you. Then he goes to the Cham and Alvana, the sun and the moon, they say, we can't help you. And then finally, he goes to the stars and the constellations, and the same answer is given, we can't help you. So Omar... So we're up to four lines up from the bottom of source number one. Omar, he says, "Eina davar talui elabi." So it's up to me to fix the situation. Hiniach rosho bein birka v'ga b'vechia ad shiyatasa nishmasa. So he put his head between his knees, and he started crying. He burst out in tears till his neshama left him. Yatasa baskol v'amra. So at that point, a loud noise came from Shemayim, from the heavens, and said, "Rav Elazar ben Dordia mezuman l'chayil mabah." So through this process, he was granted olam haba. So that's interesting. And then the Gemara says, "V'ha hacha baverahu hava umis." The Gemara is trying to prove that there's a question of whether a person will only die after minas. And not regular Avera. So the Gemara says, V'achab Avera hava umis. He was involved in an Avera by being with these prostitutes, and he died right after. Hasam nami kevan de avik batuva keminas damya. So the Gemara compares the involvement, if a person is involved in sin, to the level of Rav Elazar ben Dordia, it's similar to being a heretic. And the Gemara says one other thing. Bacha Rebbe cried when he heard this. V'amar yesh kona olama v'kama shanim, v'yesh kona olama b'sha achas. So some people, it takes them their whole lives to get Olam Haba, and some people, it's just one moment. The Amar Rebbe, Lo Dayan, Levali Tshuva, Shemekavan Osan, El Shekoran Osan Rebbe. And not only that, but this guy, Rav Elazar ben Dordia, was called Rebbe in the Vaskol. He was called a teacher, a Rebbe, a master. So not only are they Mekavan, they're accepted, but they're even called Rabbi. They're even called Rebbe, as we see from this situation. So let me just summarize the story. It's a fascinating story. And then we'll try to break it down and ask all our questions, and then we'll try to get to the deeper meaning of the story. So the story is about a man named Rav Elazar ben Dordia, and the story is as follows. He was very involved with prostitutes. The Gemara says that there was not one prostitute that he wasn't with in the world. And then he hears about one prostitute, and he goes after her. She costs a dinar of money, and he goes and he crosses all these rivers to get her. And then at the moment, the beginning of Bia, she says that, you're not going to be mekabel b'tshuva. You're not going to be accepted in tshuva. She lets out a breath and she makes an analogy. Just like the breath won't return to my mouth, so too you won't be accepted in tshuva. So he's moved by this, and he looks to to all these different elements of nature to ask him for help. The stars, all these elements, the sun and the moon, and they all say, sorry, we can't help you. Then he says, fine, I have to do it myself. Puts his head between his knees and he passes away. He dies. But the Baskol says that he was Zochet to Olam Haba, and not only that, but he was called Rebbe. He was called a teacher, so he's given respect. So what's the idea here? What's the purpose of the story? That's a general question. But then there's a lot of smaller questions, like the Gemara says that he crossed seven rivers. So what's the point of telling us how many rivers he crossed to get to this one prostitute? And then the second question, there's a lot of questions here. The second question is, why is she telling him this idea? Why is it coming from the prostitute? And then the third question, which is the most obvious, is what's the deal with these elements of nature speaking to him? And is he hallucinating, or is there a reality to the idea? Is this a real story, or is this just a medrash? And is there a reality to the idea that the Cham and Levana are speaking, and they're saying back to him, sorry, we can't help you? So what does the Gemara mean in those situations? Is he actually speaking to the Harim and the Gevaos, and are responding to them? Is that possible? And furthermore, what's the lesson here? What's the idea, the main philosophical point of this story, of the Gemara telling us the story about this man who is obviously addicted to being with harlots? And what's the purpose of the story? What can we learn from this story about this person? The Gemara even seems to say that he was respected. He was called Rebbe. So why? What's that idea? What's that concept? Okay, so one of the first questions that we had, we're just going to answer some factual questions, and then we'll get to an idea. So one of the first questions on this story is the person who's explaining to Rav Elazar ben Durdia that he's not going to be accepted in tshuva is the prostitute herself. And that's kind of funny. So what kind of idea is it that the prostitute is giving this insight to him? So if you look in source number 3, just important in learning, there's a girsa, there's a difference in girsa and in versions of the Gemara. And if you look in source number 3, it says Umra. The Gemara says Umra. She said, meaning the prostitute says, Kishem sheifichazu eina chuzer asumkoma kach elazer ben durdia in mekablanos ovetshuva. So if you look a little bit, two lines down in the Chavrusa, Ha'aros Avodah Zarah, different notes on Avodah Zarah, in this story, it says, Yesh gorsim besefer dikduke svarim Umar. It doesn't say Umra, it says Umar, Klomar, Shehu his or Ba'atmo b'tshuva. So there are some versions of this Gemara that explain that when he was with her, and at the beginning of the moment of Bia, where he was with her, of relations, so it wasn't that she let out this breath and she said this, but it was really that she let out the breath, but he said it to himself. So he was really the source of this insight. So we'll have to explain what the machlokas and the different girsas are, the versions, but he says as follows. Keep going in the Ha'aros. Ki lo mistaver she rishayis zu orra. So it doesn't make sense logically that this prostitute who's a Rasha, who's obviously she's involved in her whole life in prostitution, is going to give this insight. So it must be that it must have said Omar, that he said it to himself. So it wasn't coming from her. So it says, V'yish gorsim, some say Shama Baskol, the Omeris, that he heard a Baskol. It also says it's Kishem Shefichah. So there's another gear said that it wasn't from him, it wasn't from her, but it was a Baskol. Rabbeinu Chanan Goris Shama Havu Omrim. So he heard that they were saying. So there's different girsaos, versions of this Gemara. It's not so clear who was giving this insight to Rav Elazar ben Durdia that he wasn't going to be Mekabel b'tshuva. But so there's different versions. Some say that it really was Omar, that he said it to himself. Others say that it was a Baskol. And others say that it was really her. So we'll have to explain the difference in these different approaches to the Gemara factually, but it's important to understand that it's not so clear-cut as to how he came to this insight. And then the biggest question on that piece also, and I'll summarize the questions, and then, like I said, the idea I think will explain the Gemara. If you look in source number 4, we know that everybody can do tshuva. The Rambam in Perek Dalet says that there are things that are ma'akev tshuva. There are different averos that if a person does them, it'll be harder for them to do tshuva, but ultimately a person can always do tshuva. So if you look in source number 4, it's the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva Perek Dal Lechavav. Kol elu advar mechiyot ben afa pisha ma'akvinus tshuva in mo'ninosa. They don't prevent tshuva. Ela im asa adam tshuva mehen areza bal tshuva v'yesh lo chelek lamaba. Meaning anybody can do tshuva. So the question is, what was the insight that the prostitute was, or he himself had in the beginning of Bia, that he could not do tshuva, ema kabanos of tshuva? What does that mean? It's not true. The Rambam shows you, it's open Gemaras, that anybody can do tshuva. So what was she telling him, what was the purpose of this statement to Rav Elazar ben Durdia, that he can't do tshuva? It's not true. He can do tshuva. He can be mekabel b'tshuva. So what was she trying to teach him, or what was the insight that he had at the beginning of this experience? So that's another question. And then finally, just to take up the factual question we had, and then we'll start giving some analysis of this Gemara. Another question that we had was, is this story real or is it not real? And what seems to indicate that the story is not real is from the fact that the elements in nature, the different natural elements, are talking back to him. So the Ritva, the Chidushei Ritva, in source number 5, explains this, and he tries to show you that the story needs to be taken literally. Because he says, Amru ach anam mevakshim rachamim, lo shaharim mevakshim. It's not that the mountains actually request mercy. Elahachi ka boi lemeimar bal habraisa. This is what the Baal HaBraisa is trying to say. Klomar hu atzmo amar belibo. This is what he rationalized in his heart. Lemi elech laharem lo shamayim ulukulu. So all this was going on in the mind, in the heart of Rav Elazar ben Durdia, that if I go to the harem, this is what they'll say. If I go to the shamayim, this is what they'll say. Hein atman tzrichin levakesh rachamim b'shvilam b'ilo hayalam peh hayu meshivin lo lo nucha levakesh alecha. Right. So if they had a mouth, that's what they would have responded. That's what he's explaining. It's all internal. It's all the ideas that he's going through in his mind. There's a lot of situations like this. Not that they speak and they're responded to. We say in our minds, we rationalize and think about it. If they were to speak, this is what they would have said. So he brings different examples of that. So the Ritva wants to say that really the story is a literal story, and it's not that he went to the actual mountains and asked them to be Mavakish. It's rather he was going through some type of internal discussion within his mind that if I go to the mountains, this is what they would say. And if I go to the sun and the moon, this is what they would say. So what's that concept? Another question, like what exactly is he struggling with? What is he grappling with in the story over here by this Gemara? So those are all the questions. So again, the questions are why the seven rivers? What's the lesson that he's gaining from the either the prostitute or himself? It's not really true. He can be mekabel b'tshuva. And then finally, when he goes to the mountains, when he's not really going to the mountains, but he's internally discussing what the mountains would say and what they wouldn't say, what's the purpose of that? What's he struggling with, grappling with? And how does it end? How does the story end? So those are all the questions. Okay, so let's try to explain different parts of the story and put it all together. So does anybody have any possibilities? So let's take up the first question. So why does the Gemara tell us this idea that he went through seven rivers to find this one woman that he wasn't with, this one prostitute that he hadn't been with? What's the purpose of teaching us that? So I think that the purpose of teaching us that, if anybody wants to stop me, please go ahead, is to show you that he was driven by this fantasy that he had. It wasn't just some people are involved in arayas for the pleasure, just for the pleasure. They have a momentary lapse where, you know, there's a woman in front. Let's take this situation. There's a woman in front of you and you just can't resist if you're a man. But in this situation, you see that there was this incredible fantasy that he had attached to having Bia. There's an incredible fantasy that he had, and he was going so far as to take lots of money with him and even cross over seven rivers, showing you how strong the drive was and how strong the fantasy was in this man's mind that was attached to this experience. So that's the idea. Meaning if a person's willing to go through all this to get to that, so there must be a very strong fantasy in their mind as to how the experience is going to be that's driving that person towards doing it. It's not just a momentary lapse of reason, but rather it's a very strong fantasy that's the driving force here. So the Gemara is showing us that this man, Rav Elazar ben Durdia, was obviously not just, he didn't just have a momentary lapse, but he was driven by the fantasy of Bia, the fantasy of relations. And he was driven by it to the point where he even crossed over seven rivers to get to this one woman. So then the Gemara says that in the beginning, Bishas Hergel Davar, we'll go through the Gemara a little bit, Bishas Hergel Davar, then we have this insight that Rav Elazar ben Durdia is not going to be mekabel noso b'tshuva. So the question is, what's that idea? That was one of the questions that we had, right? So I think the idea is, so what's the Bishas Hergel Davar? What is that? So you see that he had this strong fantasy, this incredibly strong fantasy that drove him towards this woman. And when he was actually engaged in it and the fantasy was about to come true, so meaning, what's Bishas Hergel Davar? It means Haschala. At the very beginning of Bia, when he was with this harlot, this prostitute. So at the very, very beginning, this insight came to him or she said this insight. So what is that? What's the relevance of that? See, right before the fantasy was going to be satisfied in his mind, so that's the moment where a person's completely attached to this lustful activity. It's the very moment before you, let's take eating, for example. So the moment before you eat the steak's in front of you, because that's another desire, a strong instinctual desire that man has. So the moment the steak's in front of you, that's the moment where it's most difficult to turn back. Because your whole essence and your emotions, your mind, everything is geared and is basically set up to have this. For this fantasy, And you have fantasies by food, too. It's not just food isn't just purely physical pleasure, but there's a fantasy also involved. So here, as or right before the moment of achieving this fantasy, that's when the person is most attached to the act. That's the very moment before. So at that moment, that's when he has this insight. So what is that insight? What's the insight that he had? So if you look in source number 7, the Gemara, it's the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah had a sefer Shari Tshuva. He goes through different ideas in Tshuva. So he says, he brings down this Gemara, and he says, the Gemara ends up comparing this to Minas, but he says an interesting point. He says, "Be'ichor tikkun nefesh hayitzer holech umisgaber v'yikshav alav l'saki nafsho acharkin." So he says that when a person's lust and their yetzer, their inclination, gets stronger and there's fantasy involved, it gets harder and harder to fix yourself. Meaning, as the fantasy grows, the fantasy gets stronger and more of the person's attached to the fantasy. Your mind starts, you think about it all the time. Your emotions are attached to this fantasy. Everything's attached to this fantasy. So it gets harder and harder to fix yourself. And then he says, "Kamosha kasov, v'nei alav kol kamshonim, v'amra b'sin zirchonim v'recha." And he quotes our Gemara, "Kasher yetzer kasher ba'aver yidmek inin aminus." So he says when a person's yetzer, his inclination, is tied to avera, to this level, it's similar to heresy. So we'll explain what that means. But what he's showing you is that, or what the idea is, what does it mean, ein mekabel noso b'tshuva? It means that there's a certain level of attachment to avera where a person can never, or it would be virtually impossible. Maybe conceptually he could in an ideal world, but if you're so attached to something, you can't just undo that attachment. You can't just say to yourself, "Oh, I'm not going to be involved in this anymore." So the level of Rav Elazar ben Dordia at that moment, he realized that he was so attached to this avera, to this fantasy of sin and the sin itself, that he couldn't fix that element of himself. He couldn't remove the emotional attachment and the attachment of his mind to this fantasy, to this sin. And therefore, that's what it means. Ein mekabel noso b'tshuva. It doesn't mean that he couldn't do tshuva, but what it means is that it was impossible to fix that part of him. He couldn't fix it because he's too attached to that element. It's almost like he's a different person. He's too attached to that element, and it's impossible to undo it. There's a point in your life where you're so attached to something that you can't just expect a person. It's virtually impossible for a person to undo that attachment. So he realizes that. He realizes that in this area of his life, when it comes to the fantasy of being with prostitutes, being or having bia, having relations, he can't undo it. He can't do tshuva in that area. He can't undo those emotions. He can't he can't remove himself. He can't separate himself from everything that he's put into it. His whole life has been driven by this. So what does he do instead? So he goes through this whole back and forth in his mind of what the harem and the gavos would say to him. So what exactly is that? So the Gemara doesn't say that he tries to separate himself from the fantasy, and he tries to separate himself from his lust and his taivos. No, he goes through some other idea. There's some other idea here that's going on. So you have to understand what his approach is. Once he realizes that it's impossible to undo something that you're so attached to, that your whole life and your mind and your emotions and your instincts, all elements of you are attached to, you can't just undo that. It's just impossible. It would be impossible to do that practically. Maybe an ideal person, a person on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, could do that, although he would never get to that point. But for the average person, for a regular person, it's impossible if you're at that level of sin where your whole essence is attached to that sin to just say, "Okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. Like, this isn't me." So he realized that. But now he was looking for another avenue in order to fix an element of him. And that's why the Gemara doesn't say that he did tshuva. It says he asked for rachamim. He wanted help. Meaning that he realized that he couldn't do it. He couldn't undo the fantasy completely. So now he needs external help. So what exactly is going on in his mind here? And what can he do? What is it? He can't break his attachment to sin. But he can fix a premise that he has that is the source of the sin. He can't fix the attachment, but he can fix a premise. So what exactly is going on in his mind? He's going back and forth in his mind as to what the different natural elements are going to say to him and what they're not going to say to him. So, and why is there this progression from mountains all the way to Cham Olavana and then finally Kochavim Mazalos? What's the idea of the progression? So let's just do this last point and then we'll put everything together. So in source number 6, the Marasha says like this. He says, "Shehayu mitzdar shiyamos ha'yidei tshuva zu, v'alkein amar shiyivakshu alav rachamim." So he was nervous that he was going to die. So he asks, this is a different shot, but he has an idea, and there's an idea in the Marsha that I want to pull out and I want to use in the Svar. So he says that he asks the natural elements to be Mavakish Rachamim, Shalo Yafsid, that he's not lost, via Kiyam Kimosam Ba'olam Hazeh, that he should live like them in this world, that he's asking them for Rachamim so that he can live like them in this world. Veshivu Shalo Yechoshesh V'doeg Al Hefsedo Ba'olam Hazeh, he shouldn't be thinking about his loss in this world. The whole world is finite. The whole world experiences destruction. There's nothing in this world, in Chai Olam Hazeh, that exists permanently, that exists forever. The only existence that is forever is the next world, is Olam Haba. So what do we see? We see from the Marsha that he was grappling with his idea. He was grappling with the idea that this life, Chai Olam Hazeh, is really not permanent. There's no permanence to this life. And he goes from the most basic, the strong harem are strength. The idea of harem, ugvos, is that when you see a har, you see strength. You see the idea of strength and power, and it's almost a person is in awe. So he's going from the strongest element, and he's going to more abstract things in nature. He's going to the constellations, the sun and the moon. So all these things are further from man. They're more abstract. But ultimately, he has to recognize, or he recognizes, that all these things are finite. All these things are subject to destruction, and there's no real actual permanence and reality to this world. The reality exists in Chai Olam Haba, in the idea, the philosophical realm, the realm of the neshama. So the idea that Rav Elazar ben Dordia teaches us is that even though he couldn't undo his attachment to sin, he was a human being, his lusts were attached full-heartedly to the sin, and he couldn't undo that, but what he did was instead, he attacked a premise that he had, which was the source of all of his averos, which is, he had a premise that he overvalued the permanence of this world, the Chaye Olam Hazeh. He believed in the back of his mind that Chaye Olam Hazeh was really more valuable than it actually was, and he failed to realize that this life is fleeting, and that there's nothing permanent about this life. And had he known that in the beginning, he probably wouldn't be attached to the averos in the way that he was. But once he was attached, the only thing he could do was attack the premise and try to break down in his mind the premise and the source of, or one of the sources, the philosophical flaw that he had that allowed him to be so involved in this area. And that flaw was the idea that he overvalued Olam Hazeh, Chai Olam Hazeh. He believed that there was a permanence and a strength to Chai Olam Hazeh, which doesn't really exist. It really is, the only reality is really Chai Olam Haba, the reality of the soul, the reality of the philosophical. Okay, so that's the idea. And then the Gemara says that he was able to achieve, even though he didn't undo his attachment to Isser, he was still able to achieve a high philosophical level when he recognized this idea. It's very difficult for a person to realize this, but he was fully able to accept the fleeting nature of Chai Olam Hazeh to the point where he's even called Rebbe, he's given kavod, meaning he's teaching us this idea and he's given kavod, and that's what the Gemara is trying to teach us about him. So just to put everything together, it's a very interesting story, fascinating story, but just there's really three elements. One is that he was this person who was driven by fantasy, and it overtook his life. And you see that from the fact that at the Shas Hergel Dover, at the moment where his whole essence was attached to the sin, the moment before achieving the fantasy, that's when he had this, either he or she gave him this realization that he can't undo this. It's impossible for him to undo this attachment. He's been thinking about it his whole life. He spent all of his days thinking about it. He's willing to lose money. He's willing to travel far for it. His whole essence, everything is attached to it. He realizes, I can't do this. I can't undo this attachment. So what does he do instead? Instead, he tries to attack a premise that he has, a false premise that he has that allowed him in the first place to be involved in this sin, and that is the overvaluing of Chai Olam Hazeh. And he goes through in his mind, he's grappling with that idea, and he's going through all these different natural elements, and showing the Gemara is showing you that through all this he realizes that this world is fleeting, that there's no reality, there's no permanence to this world, and thus by doing that, even though he can't break down his attachment to sin, he at least is able to break down the premise of what allowed him to be involved in this sin. So that's the idea of this story. So this story is teaching you a fascinating point about tshuva, that even though he wasn't able to do full tshuva, I think that's what this is what the Gemara is saying. He wasn't able to do full tshuva, but the idea, the source of the Avera, even though he couldn't undo his emotional attachment and the attachment of his instincts to it, but he was able to attack the underlying source, the underlying premise that he had, which was false, which allowed him in the first place to get involved in it. And even though he was able to break that down, he still couldn't undo the attachments that he had and the level of attachment to fantasy. He couldn't undo that, but he could attack this false premise. I think the idea that it's like minus, this last point, is that why is it like heresy? Because when a person is that attached to sin, it must be premised on some type of false. It can't just be lust. At a certain point, there has to be a false premise, a false idea, a false concept in the person's mind to allow a person to get that involved in Avera. It can't just be that a person feels a certain way or acts a certain way. It has to be that he has some type of false premise relating to God, relating to philosophy, that allows him to be involved in chet. So I think that's the purpose. Okay, so that's one idea. One story. So the first story is the harlot story, and there's a little touch of heresy in there. The next story is just a heresy story. It's also a fascinating story. It's the Gemara right before. It's in source number 8. So the Gemara says that Tanur Baran, it's on Tezana Mabez. Tanur Baran, Kishinispas Rav Elazar Leminos. Rav Elazar was picked up by the Romans for being involved in heresy. Hello, Lagardum Lidon. So they took him to the court building to be done, to be judged. So what is this heresy? So some say, look, is it Amarlo Oso Hegmon? So we'll keep going in the Gemara. It says, this Roman official said to him, Zakin Shkemoschle Yasok Bidvarm Batalim Halalu. An old man like you, is it really appropriate to be involved in this nonsense? Meaning to say, so some say that it means that he was picked up for teaching Torah, but others say that he was picked up at another point by heretics and they forced him to worship, and that now he's being judged for worshiping Avodah Zarah by the Romans. There's different shatim, but basically, I think the pashup shot is that he was teaching Torah and the Roman is criticizing him for teaching Torah. And he's saying, how could a person like you be involved in such nonsense? Meaning he's referring to the Torah as nonsense. So Amar Lo, so he said, Neman Alai Hadayan. The judge is trusted by me. He said this. Ksavar Oso Hegmon, so this official thought he was referring to himself, Alavu Omer, that he was referring to this official. The Hulo Omar Ela Keneged Aviv Shebashmaim. So he's really referring to Hashem when he said, the judge is trusted by me. He was referring to the ultimate judge, Hashem, not to this Roman official. But the Roman official was tricked. He thought that he was referring, that Rav Elazar was referring to him. Amar Lo, he said, Hoil Vehemanti Alecha, Dimas Patarata. So he let him off, and he swore by this god that they used to have, Demos, and he said, you're Pater, because you trust me. Kishabola Beso, so now he went home. Nichnasu Talmid of Etzel Nachmo. So his Talmidim, his students, came to him to try to give him comfort. This is Rav Elazar. The Lo Kiba Lav Tanchumen, he wouldn't accept any comfort. Amar Lo Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva said, Rabbi, Tarsheni Lomar Davar Echad Mi Mashli Matani. So do you give me permission to mention something that I've learned, that you've taught me? Amar Lo Emor. So he said, Rav Elazar said to Rabbi Kiva, go ahead. Amar Lo. So Rabbi Kiva said, Rabbi Shema Minus Baldiyadcha V'Hanacha V'Alav Nispasta. So maybe what happened was, at some point in your past, you heard some type of idea that was heresy, and you enjoyed it, and that's why you were picked up for heresy. So Amar Lo Akiva. So he said back to Rabbi Kiva, Akiva Hiskartani, now I remember. You just jogged my memory. So now this is the story. Pam achas hayisi mahalech b'shuka elyon shel tzipori. He was walking in the marketplace of Tzipori. Umatzasi echod, I found this one guy, the Yaakov ish Kfar Schanya Shimo. That was his name, Yaakov from Kfar Schanya. Amar li, he said to me, kasa b'soraschem, it says in your Torah, lo savi es non zona. You're not allowed to bring a korban that was bought with money, money of a prostitute. So if money was paid to a prostitute for Bia, that money can't be used for a korban. So again, it's another story that has the same elements. So it says, Mohu, what did he say to him? He said, Mo laso semenu besakise le koin gadol. So this heretic said to Rav Elazar, can you make a toilet from the money of a prostitute? So take, instead of, yeah, you can't bring a korban, but can you make a toilet for the koin gadol? Velo marti lo klum. I didn't say anything back to him. Amar li kach limdoni. So this kofer, this heretic, said, this is what I learned. Kim eslan zona kavtza, that eslan zona yashuva. So it says that from Esnanzona, from the prostitute, it was gathered, and it should go back to Esnanzona. What does that mean? Mimakom matanofis, but it came from a place of filth. Lamakom matanofis yelechu, so it should go back to a place of filth, meaning money that was paid for prostitution should be used to buy a toilet for the Kohen Gadol, because the money came from filth, and it should go for filth. Va'anasi adavar, and he enjoyed this. Rav Elazar enjoyed this idea. And Ayidezen nispasti laminas. And then he said, because I enjoyed this idea that this guy, Rav Yaakov Kfar Sechan Yishmo, I think there are gears of the Gemara that say that he learned it from Yeshu, from Jesus, I think, if I remember correctly, this idea. But because he enjoyed this idea, so it says that's why he was picked up for minas. Ve'avarti al mashukas v'torah harcheik me'aleha darchecha. So he says that I violated what the Torah says, that a person has to separate himself, distance himself from, distance your way from her, from Avodah Zarah, or Zu Minos, sorry, that's Minos, that's heresy. V'altir kovel Pesach Besa Zu Arishos. That means that you shouldn't go you shouldn't attach yourself to a corrupt authority. Rishos is a corrupt authority. Okay, fine. So the Gemara, basically this story is a little different. This story is about Rav Elazar. So Rav Elazar was picked up by the Romans for heresy, so some say he was teaching Torah, that's why he was picked up. So the students ask him, he's upset about this, and he's contemplating why he was picked up for this. And he gets off, but the answer is that Rabbi Akiva jogs his memory. And he says, I remember the story where I was walking, this is Rav Elazar, and I heard this idea from this heretic, from this min, and the idea was that that the Torah should allow for the money of a prostitute in Esnanzona, to be used to buy the Kohen Gadol's toilet or to build his toilet, so that, because it makes sense, because he's saying that Esnanzona is money that's attached to filth, Davaratinofis, so use that money for something that's involved in filth, which is the Kohen Gadol when he goes to the bathroom. So that's the idea, and he enjoyed that idea. Rav Elazar enjoyed that idea, and because of that, he was punished. He was picked up for teaching Minos because of this idea, this point. So what exactly is the purpose of this story? So he enjoyed this idea. So what was wrong with that? What was wrong with enjoying this idea, this concept that you should be allowed to use the money of a prostitute, even though you're halachically not allowed to? So I brought down in source number 12 and 13, I don't want to read through it, but it's not really necessary. But basically it's saying that halacha says either midir abanan it's aser, but it definitely would be aser in the Torah or midir abanan to use the money that a prostitute, that was paid to a prostitute for her services, to use it to build a toilet for the Kohen Gadol. So the Torah argues with that idea. So you have to understand, what was so bad about him enjoying this? Why was he picked up for Minas? Because he enjoyed this point, this idea. So the Marsha in source number 14 just explains, Zui Minas, Hizar Kasav Laharche, Kadesh Lo Yene, V'yim Shach Achara. So the basic idea is that a person shouldn't enjoy a heretic's philosophy because he might be drawn into it. So Rav Elazar admitted that he enjoyed it, and because he enjoyed it, that's why he was punished and he was picked up for Minas. And he says that I was over this idea, that I should have separated myself and I should not have enjoyed this. So what exactly is going on here? What's the problem? So I think there's an idea here, the last idea in the shir, which is that the purpose of the story is trying to show you that the Torah's justice works very differently than the way that the Minim, the heretics, think of justice. So the idea that of Esnanzona, that a person should be allowed to use the money that a prostitute was paid for her services for the toilet bowl of the Kohen Gadol, is a very appealing idea emotionally, because it seems very fitting that money that comes from filth, the line that he says is that money that comes from filth should be used for filth. Sounds like a good idea. The only problem is that the Torah doesn't work the Torah works in categories. It doesn't work based on the philosophy or an emotional justice that this feels like, it feels right. It feels like you should use filth for filth. No, the Torah uses a system of categories that if it has to, the Torah uses psukim and categories to determine what's aser and what's mutter. So the idea of Esnanzona, for example, it can't be used for a korban. The Gemara has to work out whether the psukim indicate that it can't be used for anything on Har HaBayis. It can be used on anything on Har HaBayis, but there has to be concrete examples. There has to be a concrete system of law in order to determine when or when you can't use Esnanzona. It can't just be arbitrary. It can't just be how I feel. I feel like it's fitting that filth should be used for filth. So the idea is that the justice of Minim and the way they think about law is very emotionally appealing because it satisfies, it's very satisfying emotionally to say that money that was used for filth should be used for filth. And it's, and it draws a person into their philosophy. However, the Torah system is much more concrete in terms and categorical in terms of halacha, in terms of law, and it can't just be arbitrary. It can't, it doesn't usually typically make exceptions because something feels right or something seems right. It usually has to use a system of categories in order to determine what the law is. So the idea of what his flaw was, what was Rav Elazar's flaw? It wasn't just the idea that he enjoyed it, but that there is an emotional appeal to the way they think about law and justice. And it's not just categorical the way the Torah thinks about law and justice. And the danger of that is that a person's very it's very emotionally appealing. It could draw a person in. I was thinking about this a lot because where I live, there's like a lot of billboards which have quotes from the Pope, from Pope Francis. And a lot of the billboards, they sound very emotionally appealing. They're, you know, if the whole world loves each other, then everyone will get along. Like just very simple, naturally, beautifully appealing lines. But that's the type of thing that in the Torah is very categorical. The Torah doesn't think in an emotional way. It thinks in a categorical way. So that would just be an example, similar to Rav Elazar, this idea from filth. You can see this coming from a religious Christian. You know, from where filth come from, that's where filth go. It's a very emotionally appealing form of justice. But the Torah doesn't work that way. The Torah works in categories. Is it us or is it mutter? The Torah has psukim to determine where it's us or when it's us or when it's not us or. But it's not just based on a feeling of justice of what seems to be right. So that's the idea here. So just to put the shir together, there's two stories that we went through, and they're both in Avodah Zarah. The first story was about Rav Elazar ben Dordia, and the main idea in the story was trying to show us that even though this man, Rav Elazar ben Dordia, was so attached to Chayin and Avera that his whole persona was a different persona, and he couldn't undo it, but he was able to achieve some level of tshuva by attacking the underlying premise of what allowed him to be involved in this level of depravity, which was that he overvalued the permanence of this world. And once he fully recognized the fleeting nature of this world, of this universe, of the physical world, so then he was that was the level of tshuva that he achieved, and he was zocha l'chayim haba. He recognized this. And the second story was about Rav Elazar, that the purpose of the Gemara is teaching us that a person can't just think about law in an emotionally satisfying way. You have to Jewish law and Torah law works in a very categorical way, and a person has to be very careful when you hear thoughts or ideas that seem to be just but are appealing to an emotional system of justice, not a purely logical system of justice. So you have to be very careful because they're very appealing and it could draw a person in very easily. So that's the second story, the purpose of the second story. All right, so everybody have a good Shabbos. Thank you.